And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. You have tuned in to the Week 10 Rewind. So joining me, as he always does on Sunday afternoon, so that we can rehash the weekend that was in college football, is Mr. Tom Fornelli. Tom, you have a new number one team in your top 30. And if you're listening to this on CBSSports.com, you just scroll to the bottom of the post. You'll see Tom and I. We submit our top 30 for the CBSSports.com 126 site rankings. So we think it would be fun to just each week with the rewind show you how we voted. And you've got sort of your own method, but I'll just go ahead and let you start. You've got Florida State as the number one team in the country by a slight margin. And I just want to turn it over to you. What did you see in the 41-14 victory against Miami on Saturday night that sort of justifies it with your eyes? Like, obviously you see the numbers that have helped you make that decision. What did your eyes see that make you feel confident about Florida State as a number one team?
Well, I mean, it's not really my eyes. It's because, you know, I do the mathematical formula. It's more the fact that in the last few weeks, we've seen Florida State now knock off two teams that were ranked in the top 10 at the time, and they knocked them off, you know, pretty soundly. They crushed Clemson, and then they pulled away from Miami last night to cover the spread pretty easily. So when you combine the strength of schedule with their margin of victory, that's what's pushed them above Alabama in my formula. And it's, like you mentioned, it is a very, very tiny little margin, but it's there.
Right, but just to consider them as a potential a number one team, like that, like the rankings that Tom has are a formula. But what do you like about Florida State, and what did you see against Miami that reaffirms not necessarily in your mind their position as number one, but just as one of those top three teams in all of college football?
Oh, they're just really good on both sides of the ball. I mean, Jameis Winston is the one gets all the attention, and for obvious reasons, but what stands out the more you watch this team is just how much talent there is around him on that offense. You know, Devontae Freeman, James Wilder, Rashad Greene, these are just, you know, some of the guys that don't really get as much publicity because of Jameis Winston, but they're all very good players. And on defense, this is a team that, you know, it's one of the best defenses in the country. It took Miami yesterday, and it held them to only 4.8 yards per play and 2.9 yards per rush. It's just a team that, like the Alabama and like Oregon, is solid on both sides. Hell, solid's probably underselling it. It's very good on both sides of the ball, and it can beat you in numerous ways.
Yeah, I just think Florida State's really damn good. I've got no hot sports take. They're awesome. You know, we start with 125 football teams every single season, and it's really sort of a weeding out process. You know, do you have the right combination of talent and execution? And there has always been a lot of talent with Florida State, but they are just executing football plays at a ridiculously high level, and it's really impressive. They are awesome on third down. They are awesome in the red zone. And those are two spots where, you know, if when you try and dumb football down, those are sort of the money times, and they are taking care of business. And it's just calculated.
They're very good at football.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome. All right, well, what about Miami's side? Obviously, there is the headline loss here is Duke Johnson, broken ankle, reportedly done for the year. You know, huge part of Miami's offense, just because he's not only that sort of unbelievable athletic talent that has the knack for breaking open the big play, but he really, especially this season, has been a little bit of a workhorse at the running back position and making life easier on Stephen Morris so that they get those kind of matchups for the big plays downfield, which, you know, the few good plays that Miami had, Allen Hurns on the outside, it was good for him to step up. But how does Miami bounce back from this? They're going to have to play against Virginia Tech, who in turn is coming off a loss to Boston College and a loss to Duke.
Yeah, I mean, if they just lose that game last night, it's not the end of the world. I mean, no, there's no national title game, but they're still, you know, got a good chance to get back to the ACC title game and get a rematch with Florida State. But it's the loss of Duke Johnson that I think is going to really hurt from last night's outcome. Because, like you said, they've got Virginia Tech next week, and Virginia Tech has looked like, you know, refried ass the last 2 weeks, particularly on offense. But it's just, with Virginia Tech, you take away Duke Johnson, you take away one of the elements of that Miami offense, and when you're facing a really good defense like Virginia Tech has, it just makes life that much simpler for them because they can, you know, key more on bringing pressure and getting to Stephen Morris and causing Stephen Morris to make those throws that he makes from time to time that he just shouldn't be making. So it's tough. The season's not over by any means. They can still win the division. They can still get to the ACC title game. But it becomes a lot tougher without Duke Johnson just because it changes the way Miami has to approach things.
Miami will, you know, and Duke Johnson, Stephen Morris, that huge Miami offensive line, that offense I really thought, you know, was going to be sort of what made this team move. And what they are going to need down the stretch now is defense. And I think that one encouraging thing, if you're a Miami fan, they did pick off Jameis Winston twice there in that first half. And they do have a lot of athletes on defense. And Logan Thomas against Boston College, two interceptions, two lost fumbles, leading to 17 Boston College points off turnovers. Like you said, I think Virginia Tech's defense will be able to keep this low scoring, but Miami can equalize if they're able to be able to create some turnovers. And just, I mean, 17 points for Miami might win the game. So if they can get it from the defense or special teams too, then that's even better.
Yeah, Logan Thomas is always going to do his part to keep the opponent in the game when he can. So, it, like I said, it's Miami's. You can't write it off. It's just that Duke Johnson injury really hurts. But the defense is good. And like we're talking about those interceptions that got Winston, that was the exact kind of thing that Miami's defense needed to do last night. The problem was that Stephen Morris couldn't keep from giving the ball back a couple times.
As we always do on the run rewind, we bounce around a little bit, try and hit on the best of the action from Saturday and the weekend. And Tom, we had cold rain, we had muddy jerseys, dominant defensive performances, and honestly, one of my favorite games of the day, Michigan State 29, Michigan 6. It was just so big. I loved it. What you are on this game, you know, the Eye on College Football, we try and divvy up, make sure that we have literally eyes on everything that matters to report to you. What was your sort of biggest takeaway, aside maybe from just how ferocious, you know, from Allen and Beck, Shalit Calhoun, there was just lots of stars to go around on the Michigan State defense. But Michigan State now as a Big Ten title contender, you know, what are you liking about them?
Yeah, I love that game too. And it wasn't because it was competitive. It's because, like you mentioned, that was just an absolutely dominating performance by that Michigan State defense for the entire 60 minutes. Devin Gardner found himself inside of a nightmare that he just could not get out of. Because every time he took a snap, he'd pick his head up and there was somebody in his face already, and he was getting hit all day. As far as Michigan State defense, it's awesome. I mean, really, what is there to say? You know, it's been this way for a few years. It hasn't really gotten the national attention because of it. But if you look at what the Spartans are doing on defense right now, you got to remember, this is a Michigan team that came into the game averaging 42 points a game. And the Spartans gave them, you know, two field goals, 6 points, which means that in their last three games, Michigan State defense has allowed a total of 9 points, and it hasn't given up a touchdown in the last 182 minutes of game action.
Jeez. And yeah. And second half shutout just completely shut them down. It was almost like the best defense that comes in, plays the first half, goes into halftime, figures out what you've done, makes an adjustment, and then you're almost like one step behind. And that's what it felt like happened in this game. Like Michigan, whatever little amount of offense they were able to do in the first half, that's great. Michigan State saw it, figured it out, made the change, and they just have so many players that seem to be just smart, talented, awesome. It's just fun to watch.
Yeah, they don't mess up their assignments. That's really what it comes down to, is they've got the talent and they don't screw anything up. But I mean, Michigan averaged 2.8 yards per play in that game. 2.8. And I haven't checked, but I think if you go look through the play-by-play, I think you'll find that the Michigan offense has had more plays where it gained no yards or lost yards than it did positive plays. It was just that kind of day.
Michigan State has a week off, and then they come back against Nebraska, who won against Northwestern on a ridiculous Hail Mary. And the play was awesome. Kellogg, a little bit happy with the celebration, considering...
the Jumbo Jet?
And the Hail Mary, first of all, I mean, this is just the worst possible slide for Northwestern, right? I mean, how can you... Talk to a Northwestern fan. Can you give them anything to hang their hat on this year? I mean, this is the worst.
Wow. It's the year will end at some point. I mean, I guess it's been a lot of bad things happening for that team since, you know, they were so excited for having game day in town for the Ohio State game. Since then, just about everybody's, you know, Fenric Mark's been dealing with injuries all year and he hasn't been able to come back. Kane Coulter missed a game because of injuries. And it's just a team that's been snippet, and you look at it right now, this is a team that needs to win two of its last three games to get to a bowl game coming off of a 10-win season. And it's hard to really find the two wins considering they've got Michigan State is one of those three games, which it's really hard to see Northwestern winning that game right now. There's Michigan on the schedule, which looked bad yesterday, but it's still I don't think we should judge Michigan based on what Michigan State did to it. So I'd still consider Michigan a favorite over Northwestern. And then there's the road game against Illinois, which I think before the season you would consider an easy win for Northwestern. But at this point, I don't know if you consider that either. So it's not going to be a fun stretch to finish the year either. You know, maybe they can get things together and get it going again, but the momentum is certainly going against them right now.
Nebraska didn't play great, but do you think that they will have an opportunity, you know, get help, you know, 2 weeks from now, be a little bit healthier and give Michigan State a challenge? Because if I'm looking at it, Michigan State still has, you know, plenty of games left before the end of the regular season, but they are starting to slowly pick apart their most likely contenders for the Big Ten legends.
Yeah, it's hard to say if Nebraska can truly compete with Michigan State. I don't know if it's a great matchup for them, but the fact is they do get them in Lincoln. So, I mean, that's at least a bonus, but this is a team that lost to Minnesota last week and needed that Hail Mary to beat Northwestern at home this week. And the offense at times hasn't really looked very good. So going against that Michigan State defense, I do see some problems, but considering everything that's happened in Nebraska this year and everything that seems to have gone wrong, it's like you said, this is still a team that basically controls its own destiny in the Legends Division and could go to Indianapolis.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, and Minnesota, by the way, 7-2 now after winning 42-39 at Indiana. The Gophers' dream is continuing, but they face Penn State, Wisconsin, and Michigan State to close out the season. You think over-under for the Minnesota Golden Gophers, 8.5 wins.
Under. They're going to finish at 8. I mean, I think they'll get Penn State, but I don't think they're going to get those other two games.
Yeah, I don't think so. Wisconsin, really, I mean, there is starting to become a noticeable push for Wisconsin to just sort of be almost like people want it like you know, there's adjusted statistics where you like adjust for opponent's strength of schedule. I think that people want like an adjusted ranking or something with Wisconsin because, I mean, granted, 28-9 against Iowa, an Iowa team that has, you know, fought pretty hard. You know, they played Ohio State close. They played the good teams pretty well, and then they've also dropped to their level of competition, as you've noted here before. But 28-9, just not allowing them in the end zone. James White breaks out with Melvin Gordon not exactly having his standard 100-yard performance. Do you think that Wisconsin is a top 10, top 15 potential BCS team?
Yeah, I think Wisconsin, I mean, I think they probably would need Fresno or Northern to lose. I think that would help their cause a lot. But it's a team, you know, if you look at the way their schedule plays out for the rest of the year, and just as the talent level and the ability of this team, it's easy to see this team finishing the year 10-2. And if it's 10-2 and there's an at-large berth and one of the BCS bowls doesn't have to take Northern or Fresno, I would think a BCS bowl would lean towards Wisconsin because it's also a fan base that travels well. You know what I mean?
Oh, so yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be an attractive option. It's going to a team that will creep up towards the top 10 as long as it keeps winning. And it's a team that would be in the top 10 right now, probably, if it wasn't for some really bad officiating against Arizona State.
Some hashtag karma.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Oklahoma State and Texas Tech. This was a game that we said coming into it won't necessarily launch either team up ahead into the Big 12 title race. At least that's what we thought heading into it. But certainly the team that lost would be just another step behind. Texas Tech is that team, dropping their second straight in conference play, and now 7-2 overall. They lose to the Cowboys at home, 52-34. And man, this is a good question mark performance from Clint Schelf. In my notes to you, I think I called him a con man because I just don't trust them at all, and I can't tell whether he's going to get out here and be, you know, just a great. He really burned the Red Raiders on the ground. And you know, what was your thought here? Do you think that Oklahoma State, are they a team that can go up? I mean, do you give them a good shot against Oklahoma or Baylor? Because those two teams, that game on Thursday, which we will preview in depth this week on the podcast, you know, what did you see from them? Do you like what the Cowboys have been able to do? Because this, you know, the computers didn't like them. I didn't like them. You didn't like them. And now they're sitting here at 7-1, 4-1 in conference play, you know, contending for a BCS bowl.
Yeah, Clint Schelf is suddenly like an awesome dual threat quarterback.
Yeah, where did this come from?
I don't know. I had no idea he was capable of running like that. He had the he had like a 32-yard run against Iowa State last week, and he finished the game with 85 rushing yards. But when I saw, you know, I just figured he was playing Iowa State. You know,
and then
last night on a QB draw, he just takes off up the middle for a 67-yard touchdown where he was, you know, he didn't get touched. He was running away from people. And I was like, I had no idea he could move like that. But his passing wasn't great. It was acceptable. He was 18-34 for 211 yards. He had the two touchdowns, but he also had the two interceptions. So he really did look like a dual threat quarterback. But he looked like a run-first guy last night, which nobody expected. But Oklahoma State, I mean, the questions are still the same because even with that really good performance running, the quarterbacks have still been inconsistent throwing the ball, which is really what Oklahoma State's bread and butter is on offense. You know, they're a passing team that uses the pass to set up their run, and they'd be a lot stronger if they were able to pass the ball better. But at the same time, like you said, they're 7-1, and while I really haven't been a huge believer in them this year, they've got the benefit of they get Kansas in their next game, which I don't think will be a problem. But then they finish with Texas, Baylor, and Oklahoma, which are three tough games to finish your season with. But on the bright side, both Baylor and Oklahoma games come in Stillwater, and they do get a bye week before that Oklahoma game. So this is a team that, like a lot, controls its own destiny. No matter what happens on Thursday night with Oklahoma and Baylor, as long as Oklahoma State wins out, this is a team that's going to win the Big 12, and you can't ask to be in a better position than that. Now, will they? I'm not so sure. I can't give them good odds just because, like I said, the quarterback play has been so inconsistent that I don't know that you can really rely on them to win those three games.
Moving to the SEC, where Georgia and Florida are not a meeting of ranked teams in the cocktail party, not a pretty game of football, but we had a authority-inducing fight. You know, we had cops on the field. We had, you know, big, you know, late drama. And the eventual result, of course, being Georgia's 23-20 victory. Georgia improves to 5-3. Todd Gurley, really the most notable Georgia takeaway for me, just how much different the Georgia offense is when you have a talent like that in the backfield. Florida, the comeback was, it started with a safety, then they were finally able to get the running game going with Taylor and Mack Brown. Florida's defense coming up with some big plays down the stretch, but just simply not enough after a really horrid first half performance by the Gators. What do you have for Florida down the stretch? I've got no fear, if I'm a South Carolina fan, at Florida's potential challenge to the Gamecocks.
No, I mean, first of all, that game yesterday was ugly, but if you really think about it, it wasn't as ugly as the game last year between those two teams.
Oh, and there was like 50 turnovers?
Terrible. Yeah. Yeah, that was Jarvis Jones rules the world. But no, Florida, I mean, if Florida's healthy, it's a good team. It's not, you know, a great team. It's got a great defense. But if it's still not a great team if it's healthy. But with all the injuries that it has right now, it's just a bad team. So I agree. If I'm South Carolina or I'm Florida State, which are, you know, the two biggest games remaining on Florida's schedule, which are big games both for Carolina and Florida State as well, I'm not all that worried. This is a team that I feel like if you can get to 17, 20 points, you've got a really good chance of beating this team, because I have no faith in that offense. And the defense has been ravaged by injuries, and it's getting weaker with every seeming week.
Georgia has Auburn and Kentucky left on their SEC schedule, with going on the road to play Auburn, taking on hosting Appalachian State the week before that. The Bulldogs, it was good to see Gurley back in the lineup, but with everything that Auburn sort of showcased in really a complete 35-17 win on the road at Arkansas, you know, fake injuries and all. I mean, the fact is they just still have a ridiculous ground attack right now. And I think I like Auburn at home right there, which in my mind – I'm starting to feel comfortable thinking that the Bulldogs' SEC title game hopes are fading fast, even with this win.
Yeah, I don't give Georgia very good odds to get to Atlanta. If that game was in Georgia instead of at Auburn, I'd say they have a better chance. But also that Georgia run defense, or the defense total against that Auburn rushing attack, I have concerns there. Although, I mean, if you look at it, they still have that chance, but it's not a very good one, even with Gurley back, because that offense is going to be better as it gets healthier. But still, there's just been too much damage done.
And Georgia, of course, does not, while they do have the head-to-head advantage against South Carolina, they do not against the current SEC East division leader, still alone in first place with only one loss. The Missouri Tigers improved to 8-1 overall, maintain their top 10 status by just a drubbing of Tennessee at home, 31-3. The Missouri defense really does a good job of clamping down, and Matty Mauk with a final. It's like Matty Mauk. Think about the defenses. I mean, he had to go up against Florida and he had to go up against South Carolina, which is, you know, a good, really, really good defense. You got to think Tennessee. This was just this is a breath of fresh air for him.
It was nice to see for once, you know, where there's that game where me and Jerry look at it on the Picks podcast and think, oh my God, this is too easy.
Yeah.
It's like taking, and then it actually works out that way. So it was nice to see. There was never a doubt in that game how that one was going to end up. But this is Mizzou. I still consider them the favorite in the SEC East, but I also still see another loss in there, because, I mean, Kentucky shouldn't be a problem. That's their next game. But they get Ole Miss on the road, which, I mean, isn't going to be like the hardest game in the world, but it's not going to be easy either. It's still going to be a tough game. And then they finish the season with Texas A&M at home. And that Aggies-Mizzou game, I would lean more towards the Aggies at this point, even with the way Mizzou has played, even if James Franklin comes back by then. So I think this is the team that still has its finger hands pretty firmly on the SEC East title. But I wouldn't be shocked to see at least one more loss. So I don't know if they're going to stay there.
Yeah,
with Matty Mauk playing well.
Yeah, after seeing Florida, I think that Missouri needs to win both. I think South Carolina is going to finish at 6-2 in SEC play, and because South Carolina has that head-to-head win, and it doesn't look like Georgia is going to be able to create some weird three-way tiebreak scenario, I think Missouri, like you said, they control it. They need to go on the road to Oxford, beat Ole Miss, then take care of the Aggies at home. And man, if they do that in back-to-back weeks, no argument from anybody else. That is a unbelievably difficult schedule that they have put together. And if they can get through it at 6-2, 10-2, that is a worthy SEC East champion in my mind.
All right, let's go chaos here, okay?
All right.
Let's say of all the young, let's say Florida State, Oregon, Ohio State, and Baylor. Let's say three of them lose, all right? And now Mizzou actually takes out Kentucky and beats Ole Miss, it beats Texas A&M, and then it goes to Atlanta and beats Alabama, knocks Alabama from the rank of the unbeaten. So now let's say, just for the sake of argument, Ohio State's the only undefeated team left in the country at this point, and you've got a one-loss Oregon, a one-loss Baylor, a one-loss Alabama, and a one-loss Mizzou. Does Mizzou get that bid? It just beat Alabama.
Right.
It just went off three straight weeks beating Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and Alabama. Its only loss came in overtime against South Carolina. Did they get chosen over Oregon? Did they get chosen over Baylor?
Who is Oregon's one? Is Oregon's one loss in the Pac-12 title game or against Stanford?
Ooh, let's say the Pac-12 title game. That loss is fresh in everybody's mind.
Oh, well then, yeah, Missouri definitely gets in.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
Imagine that's a possibility. Not a very good one, mind you.
Right.
But that's where this season is right now. Well, Mizzou could end up in the title game.
I mean, I think that's what this is going to be. As we were arguing last night and I was putting together the podcast rundown and you were standing up for sanity as in, yeah, let's chill out. Let's wait until we get to the end of the season. Because even if we get to conference championship Saturday, I know college football too well. College football will start knocking off top-ranked teams on that conference championship Saturday if we taunt the college football gods with all these undefeated teams.
Yeah, I root for chaos every chance that I get, but it's just the way things always work. It always tends to work itself out. At some point, we're going to be down to two undefeated teams, or we'll only be down to one, and then the argument becomes which one lost team goes in.
Yeah, the which one lost team is where a lot of sort of poor logic gets exercised, but I'm not going to say that the system altogether is entirely sane or correct. So,
but I mean, at the same time, considering this is the last year of the BCS, wouldn't it be somewhat fitting if there were five undefeated teams at the end of the year?
Totally. Absolutely. Especially if it was five, because then that helps the bracket creep argument. Because then,
yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
Then it's like, oh, well, the four-team playoff isn't even enough. It wouldn't have helped us in the dreaded year of 2013.
Yeah, so now all of a sudden we've proven that the BCS doesn't work and the four-team playoff isn't good enough. We need to go to eight.
All right, let's try and hit some other stuff. I want to make sure that we don't just stay too BCS hungry. Notre Dame and Navy. Jalen Smith showing the benefits of playing five stars early, huh? Coming up with a little bit of some game-winning play.
Showing the benefit of 4-5 speed is what he was showing the benefit of.
Notre Dame, just a really, really tough game against Navy. Escape with a 38-34 win. Great performance by the midshipmen getting in there and, like, passing. And stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like really having a balanced offensive attack and really stressing the Notre Dame defense. And sure enough, you know, at least they were able to make a play at the end. You know, what's your takeaway? What's the Notre Dame takeaway here?
This is more of the game that I was expecting to see kind of with last week's game against Air Force, just with the Lewis Nix injury in the middle against an option team like the Air Force was. But the way they handled it, I thought, you know, play an option team 2 weeks in a row, it's not hard to prepare for. But the middle of the defense just got torn up by the most part by that Navy offense all night. And it really just became a shootout. And the only difference was that Notre Dame's defense actually was capable of making a stop, because the entire game you knew that's what it was going to come down to, because there was Navy's defense never really had a prayer of stopping the Notre Dame offense. But I think overall it just shows, I mean, this Notre Dame team, it's been playing better the last few weeks and it actually still got a good chance. As Jeremy Fowler wrote on the site on Saturday, this is a Notre Dame team that could end up in a BCS bowl again simply because of the way its schedule works out. But it's like I said, it's really, in my mind, it's an 8-4 team.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of just gotten driven home yesterday. It's a team that's going to lose, I think, at least one more time this season.
So I found this interesting. Navy lost, but won at least a share and the opportunity to retain the Commander-in-Chief's trophy in a 2-hour block of time. Did you know that?
Yes.
That's interesting. Yeah, Air Force Air Force knocking off Army, therefore guarantees that they're either going to have a share or Navy will be able to retain the Commander-in-Chief's trophy with if they can take care of Army in that season finale at the end of the year. We got Northern Illinois, Fresno State, neutral field. Which team do you like more? And then, aside from the matchup of those two teams, in general, which team do you favor? Because that's really what we're starting to look at as, you know, UCF, that's they'll have an opportunity to maybe creep up, but I just still think they're so far behind in the polls. And if Northern Illinois and Fresno State continue to win and remain undefeated, they will continue to creep up. I mean, it's looking like one of those two teams will get an opportunity to be in the BCS. And in your mind, which team is more deserving?
It's hard to say deserving. I think, like, if you put them on the neutral field, I give Fresno State the edge right now, just because I think Fresno State has better athletes on their team, and I think they're close matchups, but I think Fresno State just has the better athletes and the more explosive. So I would give the Bulldogs the edge there. But it's hard to say which team really deserves it, because neither team has played the toughest of schedules, and Fresno State hasn't really blown people out. But while Northern Illinois has blown out UMass and Eastern Michigan the last 2 weeks, UMass and Eastern Michigan are two teams that keep showing up in my best worst 10 list for a reason. And also, in the rankings that we talk about that I do, of the bottom 30 teams right now in my rankings, 7 of them are in the MAC. So it's...
The MAC isn't very, MAC isn't very impressive. This after last year, when the MAC, all the teams were good at the right time, and I want to say that some of the people that really follow the league closely, and maybe even a smart guy named Tom Fernelli from Chicago, said, "Yeah, this doesn't mean the MAC's always awesome. This is just right place, right time kind of stuff."
Yeah, I mean the MAC is so hard to predict from year to year. I mean, last year was kind of just a perfect storm for everybody to be playing well and playing good. But this year, it's just a lot of bad teams in that conference. So I see two more games where Northern actually has a chance to lose. I think Toledo and Ball State, Toledo and Ball State are really the two games that I think Northern has a chance to lose. So at the same time, they're going to be favored in every single game they have left too, because nobody else in the MAC is just that good. Fresno State is either going to, if it gets to the Mountain West title game, it's going to be playing a Boise team or a Utah State team, both of whom have lost their starting quarterbacks for the season. So one of them might get the BCS Bowl if they stay undefeated, but honestly, I don't know if either would truly deserve it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Did you know that Boise State's backup quarterback, old Grant Hedrick, he had 5 touchdowns yesterday against Colorado State, completing 19 for 27 for 305.
He's the new Kellen Moore, Chip.
I agree with you that in general, Fresno State, I'm still intimidated about that Mountain West title game, because remember, the first game was 41-40.
I mean, they didn't exactly blow out Boise. I wouldn't mind seeing that rematch.
Yeah, no, I would be very excited, and I do believe that game will be on CBS Sports Network.
That's a good station. You should watch it.
You should watch it. I threw this on there. Are there any teams, or just in general, like the teams and the conference title race, are there any teams that are starting to just sort of almost like surprise you? I'll give you just an example that sort of spurred this question. Like Syracuse and Boston College might be bowl teams, depending on how like the next couple weeks play out. We already like sort of talked about Duke, but Georgia Tech is 6-3. I mean, they could finish as a 7 or 8 win team. We already talked about Minnesota. Who are some of these other teams that, as the season is winding down, you're starting to hit the like, whoa, I didn't predict them to be a 6-8 win team?
Some of the teams you mentioned, I was looking at. Well, you see, the Syracuse Boston College is not a team I was expecting to get to a bowl game this year, but props to Adazio, he's gotten that turned around pretty quickly. I think if you look around the Big Ten, Indiana still has a decent chance to get to 6 wins. Illinois actually still has a chance to get to 6 wins, which is really strange to say considering they haven't won a Big Ten game in 2 years, but 3 of their last 4 games of the year are winnable games, so Illinois might pull it off. We talked about Northwestern. Other than that, I mean, in the Pac-12, there's really everybody there that's going to a bowl game you kind of expect, except maybe, I guess you could say, Washington State would be a surprise.
Yeah.
They've got a chance to get to a bowl game. But Tennessee, I think, would be surprising to me, because they can win 2 of their last 3 games. They're going to a bowl. And while I believed in the Butch Jones hiring was good long run, I didn't think it would happen this quickly for them. So that's a little bit of a surprise. And then I think the bigger surprise to me, looking at going down things, is that FAU could end up in a bowl game. I mean, even with everything that's going on.
They got that win.
Beat Tulane.
Yeah.
They beat Tulane, so now they're at three wins. And their last three games are Southern Miss, New Mexico State, and FIU. All three of which were in my best worst 10 as the 10 worst teams in the country this week.
FIU already eliminated from postseason eligibility with loss number 7 coming at the hands of the East Carolina Pirates. It's crazy. FIU, Florida International, the team that was like competing for Sun Belt titles 3 years in a row. Cristobal's out right at the time that a conference switch is made, and now it looks like that FIU and Southern Miss. I mean, and unless something crazy happens, I mean, I fear for these programs that they are just about to become cellar dwellers in Conference USA for quite some time.
I give Southern Miss a better chance of bouncing back than FIU. But yeah, as it was when it happened, the dismissal of Mario Cristobal was, it's a stretcher and it still is. And I don't think anybody's surprised to see how it's worked out.
All right, let's individual performances. What stood out in Week 11 to you, Tom?
First, I'd like to mention Trey Mason. He only had 168 yards rushing, but he had 4 touchdowns, and those touchdowns count. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
You got to give him some props for that. There's also Fresno State had some ridiculous numbers last night as Derek Carr finished with 487 yards passing. But on the receiving end of most of those yards happened to be Josh Harper, who finished with 17 catches for 253 yards and 2 touchdowns. And finally, it was nice to see Taj Boyd and Sammy Watkins get back to being Taj Boyd and Sammy Watkins against Virginia yesterday. They both finished with more typical Taj Boyd and Sammy Watkins stat lines than we've been seeing in recent weeks.
Liked seeing the Taj Boyd Sammy Watkins connection back in a similar line. It was nice to see Marquise Lee on Friday checking in with a nice 71 yard catch, 105 yards and a touchdown. Good to see him healthy. Good to see him playing, because for all the things that have gone wrong at Southern Cal, few have been more disappointing for a fan of good football players, quite like Marquise Lee's junior campaign.
Yeah, number 9 can still run the 9 route.
Yeah, nice. Did you come up with that one yourself, or has that been floating around for a while?
I tweeted it on Friday night, so I guess I get the copyright trademark for it.
Yeah, I guess.
I said, you think it'd be easier to cover Marquise Lee considering he's wearing his route on his jersey?
Nice. That's at Tom Fornelli. I mean, that's the reason.
That's the kind of in-depth analysis you get.
He is Tom Fornelli. That, of course, you can follow him. That, make sure that you're subscribed to the Eye on College Football podcast this week, as we are just looking ahead. You know, apologies, Pac-12 fans. You know, Arizona State, they got the win they probably should have gotten. USC, nice to see them back. UCLA kind of took care of business, but really, our attention will be all you're going to get all the attention that the Pac-12 can get up ahead as we look at Oregon and Stanford. Just a mammoth game that we will cover in great detail on this Eye on College Football podcast. So
can I say before we go that I'm very mad that both those games are scheduled on Thursday at the same time?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I'm the guy on Thursday night duty, so that's fine for me. I'm golden. This is
no, but I would. I mean, why couldn't one of those games be scheduled on Thursday night and one of those games be on Saturday night? Did you see what the ABC primetime game is this week on Saturday?
Well, CBS has Alabama LSU at primetime.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Well, then, yeah, they did it exactly right. My bad.
Oh, no. But I was just saying in general, like the Notre Dame Pitt game is what you try.
It's a national broadcast.
But that's what you trot out against Alabama LSU. I mean, I think game day's even going. Sure. Game day's going to be at Alabama LSU. They're going to do that thing where they do the whole pregame show with like the focus of the game being what's eventually, you know, the 8 o'clock CBS game. Then Herbie flies out to a sold out Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're looking live. The 13 of you there.
You know, Brett and Herbie are going to be watching the Alabama LSU game on the TV up there.
oh yeah. Brett's
going to be doing play by play for the Alabama LSU game on ABC.
And whoa, Herbie, we've got developments down here.
Down in the bayou.
Yeah, we've got developments in SEC country. I can see it. But yeah, that's that Notre Dame Pitt game. Wait, hold on. Is that gonna end up being my game? Not it.
No.
You've got Notre Dame. That's definitely you.
No.
Yeah.
No, I almost swore just then, but no. actually, no. I think we can all agree that's a game we could probably just ignore.
We'll keep an eye. We're smart. We're talented. Mildly intelligent. We can figure out ways to get it covered.
I might have an extra like laptop monitor. I could put that on in the corner while I'm watching Alabama LSU.
Again, we'll take the rest of our inside baseball college football gripes to the campfire. Our thanks to all of you for listening. He's Tom Fernelli. I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much.